You're listening to DottoTech, helping you get the most out of your technology wherever you use it, at home, at school, or at work. Brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. 20 years, the trusted voice of technology in Canada, Steve Dotto.
Hello and welcome to DottoTech. I am Steve Dotto and I am glad you're joining us tonight. Well, the holidays were a trial for all of us, I think, and what we're going to do is something a little bit different on DottoTech. We don't often do best of shows, but tonight we're going to do a best of show because we frankly had trouble finding enough guests that were actually conscious and willing to come out and talk about technology. Yeah, we didn't have trouble. I didn't want to actually wrangle them up. So, Art, is it okay with you if we do a best of show?
Yeah, I partied like it was 1999 a few days ago. So
Yeah. Yeah, it was good.
I think it's time.
It's time.
Just take it easy this week.
Yeah, we're going to pick a couple of the best stories. We've been on the air for a year now. We've got a couple of good stories. We're gonna start things out super cheerful. We'll talk about actually, you know what we'll do? The first segment we're going to do is we're going to talk to one of our favorite guests, Todd Maffin.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a New Year's theme. We're going to talk about decluttering your digital life. That's cleaning up. Did you make New Year's resolutions, Art?
I don't want to talk about them. I feel like they're like birthday wishes or the coins you throw into.
Art, what did you put it out to the universe? Put it out to the universe.
I'm going to become a Mac fanboy. That's what I'm going to do this year.
Are you really?
I got the 4S, so I'm going to, next.
When I started doing this show, you said, why would I ever want a Mac?
Quote. I said it was too expensive.
Yeah.
I came into some money. I'm not going to talk about it. I can't talk about it.
Let's not talk about it. Instead, let's have a listen to what Todd Maffin has to say. On the other end of this line, Todd Maffin of toddmaffin.com, of course, social media expert. Hey, Todd, New Year's resolutions. You sent me a little note saying, are you committed to decluttering your digital life? What do you mean?
Well, I don't know about you, but I tend to, through the year, find all these cool little things, you know, like we were talking about these browser extensions, and they add on to my web browser, and I end up doing more things with them, and I add on more services, more software, and I get another Twitter account, and you know, by the end of the year, it kind of all, I've got 85 things chirping, chiming, growl alerts flashing at me on the computer, and it's pretty distracting, you know. I mean, for the most part, I'm a writer. I mean, I do reviews and audits for companies, but that's all writing. It's the kind of stuff that you've got to sit down in a dark room, have someone throw meat at you once every 3 days, and just get to work. And all these distractions, which, you know, are... since I started talking, since the last moment you actually spoke, which was about 45 seconds ago, four little chirps have shown up on my computer, and just now one buzzed in my ear on the phone that I'm on. Like, it's nuts.
It's interesting because not only does it take up time, but it takes you away from productivity, but it also uses up system resources on your computer like crazy. I just wrote an article last week about I finally turfed Firefox and went to Google Chrome. The reason was, well, Firefox would crash on me occasionally, which was bad enough, but I installed this memory management program that told me where my resources were being used, and I was stunned to see how much of my computer's resources Firefox was stealing.
I know what you're talking about. This is Memory Scope, the fellow from the store that you had on the other day.
Yeah. Exactly. It was App of the Week last week. It was called Memory Scope. Have you installed it?
I did. It's phenomenal. I absolutely agree. This is a Mac program.
Yeah.
And it loads up in the dock. You click it and it shows you where your memory is going. But most importantly, what's quite clever about it is because some programs leak, right? They'll sort of, it's sort of like an old engine. It kind of leaks memory and this kind of snaps it all up and I hadn't run into one like that before.
But it caused me to finally turf Firefox, and that's not an easy thing when you've been living in a browser for a couple of years. Everything is there, and it's even though it's theoretically easy to transfer everything over, it's not. But I spent about 3 or 4 hours, and now I'm in Chrome. And guess what happened this morning? As I was prepping for the show, Chrome crashed. I cannot believe it. I don't know why. I'm afraid. I'm afraid that I've made a mistake, but nevertheless.
Well, I'll bet you I know why. I'll bet you that you've got a lot of these browser extensions, a lot of these things loaded up. The more of these things you load up, right, the more unstable it gets.
I've got two browser extensions loaded into Chrome.
Oh, well, I don't know what the hell's going on.
I've got a Measure It, which I like because whenever you're doing web graphics on your web page and you want to see how many pixels wide a graphic is, it's a little online ruler that measures things. And then I've got Evernote. Everybody has to have Evernote. It's a must-have, and that's it. Those are the only extensions that I have installed in, I think.
I find, you know, I mean, one of the things that I sort of committed to, and I try to do this every year, is to sort of declutter my digital life from things like that. So it sounds like you've done a good job already.
Just started. I think I have a lot more to go.
I think we all do. I actually found a really interesting program called Rescue Time. Have you heard of this?
It's no.
It's a website.
No.
Rescue Time is really cool. It's a little application, runs on Windows or Mac, will sit in your system tray or menu bar, whichever version you've got there. It's a little tiny program, and it just does nothing. It just sits there, and as far as you're concerned, it's just taking up a little bit of icon space. But secretly what it's doing is it's keeping an eye on everything you do. And every document you have open, every website you go to, every program you have open. So it's not just monitoring what you're doing online, but actually on your computer. Like, how much time do you spend playing Angry Birds, the application, versus how much time are you actually in your word processor, right? So it'll track all this stuff, and it logs it securely on a website under your account. You've got your own password. No one else can see where you've gone and how you're spending your day. And it knows, it's got this huge database of programs, and it's estimated, get this, the level of productivity for each application and each website you could go to. Thousands and thousands of these application programs and or websites. So here's an example, PowerPoint. Most people would say if you're in PowerPoint, you're being very productive. So that scores a +2 on their productivity ranking.
Uh-huh.
If you're on the Twitter website, it's probably a -1. That's probably not very productive, but not horribly unproductive, just not really productive. So you end up with, over the course of the day, it doesn't prompt you, it just knows to do this. Over the course of the day, it kind of keeps track of what you're doing and how you're doing it, which programs, and therefore how productive it thinks you're being. And then you can run reports. So you can have it once a week. This is what it does for me. Once a week is it emails me a breakdown, a graphical breakdown of how I've spent my time. So it says, all right, overall, you've spent most of your time in presentation software this week. Well, big surprise, I've got a speech and workshop coming out next week, right? So that's not a surprise. It says, the next time, you spent a lot of time on social networking sites. Well, okay, guilty as charged. So you get a sense of sort of how you're spending your time, and then it'll chart your productivity. So you can even say, it'll even report to you, you know, okay, here's a chart of the last 12 weeks. Notice your productivity level is actually declining.
Wow.
Really, it is really cool. RescueTime.com, and it's free. They've got a free plan. The only distinction really between the pro version, which you pay for, and the free version is the pro version will track things like actual document titles. So let's say that you're working in Microsoft Word, and you're using the free version. It'll know that you've been in Word versus Excel. If you're paying for the pro version, it'll also be able to tell you, well, while you were in Word, you were actually working on the HR document 80% of the time and some other document 20% of the time. Mm. It's a little more granular.
So just out of curiosity, what's a good productivity score for you and what's a poor one?
I don't vary very much. I tend to be sort of in the, I think I'm in the upper 45%. And it gave me this pathetic little badge. And I'm like, really? Upper 45%? I mean, cheers for them for trying to put a positive spin on it. But
it'd be interesting to know kind of overall what people who use this software, what range is the average. Like, I would think that if you're 50% productive, of the amount of time you spend on computer, just knowing how we end up navigating back and forth, checking Twitter feeds, checking your Facebook status update, I would tend to think anything closing in on 50% has to be actually pretty good.
I think it is pretty good, yeah.
Now, can you install this on your employees' computers?
You can. Well, there's a team version as well where you can do that as well.
Yes. I wonder how popular that would be.
Not very, but legally in Canada, you've got the right to do that, to monitor your employees' work, and if that's the way you choose to do it, you can do it that way.
I think
you don't need their permission.
I think it comes down to the attitude of the boss.
You know, yeah.
Whether or not is this a tool to help us, or is this a tool that I'm going to use as a weapon against you?
That's right.
Now, speaking of weapons against people, you told me that you figured out a way to unfriend people politely in Facebook. Part of decluttering your life might be reducing the number of spurious friends you have on Facebook.
Yeah, absolutely. I do this about every 6 months or so. I go through and I kind of clear out the friend clutter. Isn't that an awful thing to say?
But, do you do that?
You know, yeah, I do. So watch yourself.
Have I survived? Am I your friend on Facebook?
You're so far.
Oh, good,
so
good,
far.
Good, good, good.
We'll see how the rest of this interview goes. But okay. Yeah, so far, so good.
We haven't fought yet. Yeah, that's good.
And So yeah, so there's a couple of things. One is Facebook doesn't by default show you who's unfriended you. I think they don't do that because they want, you know, I mean, if I unfriended you, I think you would probably send me an email. Well, why did you unfriend me? I mean, you get a lot of that, right?
It would be awkward. Yes,
it would be awkward. However, if you want to know, there is a way to find out who's unfriended you, and it'll tell you right away. There's a couple of tools like this.
Yeah, I've seen they're tools that you have to sign up for, though, right?
No, not this one. The one that I like is called Social Fixer. Now, they've just changed their name. They used to be called Better Facebook, but Facebook came along and smacked them down with a lawyer's letter. So now they're called Social Fixer. And this is one of these browser extensions we were talking about. So it's free. You install it into your browser. Very easy to do. You just Google Social Fixer, and it'll show up. And it lets you, it'll sort of add features to Facebook. So as you're browsing now, on the right-hand side, there's a thing called Friend Tracker. And if someone defriends you, because I think unfriend is not actually grammatically correct, but anyway, it's what's caught on. I think it should be defriend. I will change the world single-handedly with this, by the way.
Alienate.
If someone defriends you, it pops up. You get their name. You can find out pretty much within the hour that they did it. So how do you unfriend people? Well, there's really the only way to do it is to do it, and then, or maybe announce, you know, here's a polite way of doing it. Here's the Canadian approach. Is first, I would post on your wall, on your personal profile wall, something to the extent, apologetic tone, and say something like, I'm just swamped with work these days. I'm trying to scale back on all of my electronic communications. I'm going to reduce my friends list down to, just down to close family members. Please don't be offended. So then you kind of covered it. Then people...
Except for close family members that you unfriend.
well, then if they discover that you've done it to them, right? They don't feel like you've done it specifically to them.
Yes.
Like, well, I just got caught up in this sweep. And now, on Twitter, it's easy to because
yeah,
Twitter, you can
just follow
and
unfollow, yeah.
There's a great tool out there. It's also free. It's called Twit Cleaner. Not Tweet, not Twitter, but Twit Cleaner. As in a twit, you know, a person who's kind of a goof. So twitcleaner.com. This is also free. You give it, you log in with Twitter once you're there at twitcleaner.com. And it takes a couple of minutes. It goes through all of the people you followed and it analyzes them. Tries to figure out what kind of tweeters these people are. And then it gives you a list of people it thinks are dodgy. So it'll say, here's a list of people you follow who have not tweeted in the last 3 months. And if you click on their name, bang, you've unfollowed them.
Okay.
Yeah, and it'll also say, here's a list of people who don't actually ever have conversations with people on Twitter. All they do is post links. Or here's a list of people who just replicate other people's content. Okay. So it's got 5 or 6 of these categories, and it went through, and it actually found more than 10% of the people I followed were either spam bots, or they weren't good people to follow on Twitter. And why is that important? Because Twitter can influence your clout score. We don't have time to get into clout. It's K-L-O-U-T if you want to Google it. But it's a measure of influence. And on the internet, it'll find out how influential you are. And you are only as influential as the people around you, the people you follow. So if your Twitter account, if you're following lots and lots of people who are jerks or who are spam bots or who, you know, they themselves have low clout scores, if you're following those people, your clout score will go down. And why is that important? Because these days, especially if you're going into an admin job or a marketing job or a job in human resources, people will look at your LinkedIn account. Sometimes they will check your clout score to see how influential you are.
I'm starting to do that.
If I were looking for a marketing director for a shopping center, I'd want someone who has a high personal clout score because they know how to network. So those things are important these days.
As I look for guests or as I look for stories or as I look for people that I want to follow, I am measuring people's clout score. And I'm starting to follow mine and worry about mine occasionally. So yeah, it is a different world. But mainly, we're dealing with cleaning things up. So you've given us a whole bunch of great tips for cleaning people up. And I do have one last question for you. Like, I never follow who unfriends me or defriends me or alienates me on Facebook. So I'm not going to. I'm not going to install that app.
No.
How do you feel when you see someone has stopped following me on Facebook?
How do I feel when someone unfollows me?
Personally, because you're a sensitive guy.
I'm not that offended. You know, I know that people get overloaded. And people often will, you know, when they first get on Facebook, they'll friend everyone, and then they sort of think better of it when their news feed is cluttered. So I'm not. I don't think I've ever been offended when someone's defriended me.
I keep an eye on my overall number, but then I use Facebook not as much for personal stuff. I use it a lot to support the show, and I do a lot of quasi-business stuff Facebook.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's it seems to just rest nicely there, because the stuff that I converse with my friends is the sort of stuff we cover on the show. So I tend to use it that way. I'm not sure if I'm really comfortable with that and continuing in that vein, but for the time being, I'm going to. So I just kind of keep my eye on the general number, and I never really concern myself too much. But I think I might end up having a little bit hurt feelings sometimes if people unfriended me. So I think I'll avoid that one.
Yeah, that might not be the best one for you.
Yeah, because I'm a sensitive guy. Todd Maffin. ToddMaffin.com is his site. We will post links to all of the different sites that he talked about. Thanks so much for your time today. And Todd, if we don't see you before Christmas, the best of the season to you and your family.
You as well.
Thank you, Todd.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. You're listening to Dottotech, brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.
And one of the more controversial interviews we did last year was with the founder of RateMDs, the doctor rating site. I have some friends in the medical fraternity who did not appreciate the information that was shared there. Well, tough darts. It was interesting.
It's anonymous criticism.
Yeah, and I can understand the fact that they are a little bit that they don't like some aspects of it. But on the other side, it's an opportunity for people to share information, and we'll let you be the judge. You decide whether or not these rating sites like RateMDs.com are something that you should participate in, or even should be online. There has been much conversation about using social media for different sorts of evaluation. The Rate My Teacher site has been a source of a lot of consternation for a lot of parents and teachers, and a source of a lot of glee for a lot of kids who have rated their teachers. But teachers aren't the only profession being rated online. Joining me online right now from Rochester, New York, is John Swapsinski. He is with RateMDs.com, a finding and rating a doctor and dentist site, and it is full of rich information about your doctors or dentists. John, thanks for coming online.
Oh, thanks for having me, Steve.
Now, obviously, one of the first things people think is our medical profession, more than any, seems to be a bit of a sacred cow. It's one that people don't talk too much about the quality. I mean, we talk privately about the quality of our doctors and dentists, but public conversation seems to be kind of go against our grain as a society.
Yeah, I think there's always a fear that someone is going to get banned from the medical system. You know, there's a good Seinfeld episode where Elaine ends up getting banned by her doctor and ends up having to go to a veterinarian. And I think that's kind of a deep-seated fear that people have, that, you know, if word gets out that you're talking poorly about your doctor, that, something bad is going to happen to you.
So your site, now I imagine it's used a little bit differently in the States and in Canada, where there's different pressure, certainly different pressures on our medical systems. But the bottom line is, you can go on there and you can search in your area for doctors and dentists and specialists and see what other patients are saying about them.
Yeah, that's correct. Almost anything that people spend time or money on these days, they want to try to get the best, get the best choice for themselves. And just like buying a book on Amazon, you want to check the ratings to see if it's a good book. We're bringing the same sort of service to the medical profession. And if you want to find a doctor or a dentist, you can go on there and look at the ratings and read the comments that other people have left. And also, if you want to let other people know about your experience with your doctor, you can go on there and do that too.
Now, how long have you been online?
It's been going since early 2004.
Oh, wow.
About 7 years now.
So you've got a lot of listings. Now, what's the response from the medical fraternity? What are they saying to you? I imagine it runs the gamut.
Yeah, it does. Actually, about a year after we started the site, we got a couple nasty letters from the Canadian Medical Association and the Canadian Medical Protective Association, which is a legal arm. And they both basically said, you better take these negative ratings down. And instead, we publicized the fact that they said it, and we got some press out of it. And you know, basically, we think it's a freedom of speech issue, and that people have a right to talk about what they want. And doctors are an important subject. The medical profession and, you know, medical care in general can literally be a matter of life or death.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to make sure you get the right doctor.
Yeah, and in Canada, where we've got a real shortage of GPs, I imagine that's, you know, it's difficult to find a doctor anyway, so you almost take whoever's available. But I'm wondering if the dentist profession, I wonder if they're a little more open to this concept, because they're certainly in a much more competitive space. Do you notice a difference between how the two different professions look at your service?
Yeah, I think you're right that dentists and cosmetic surgeons, it's definitely more of a cutthroat industry, because it is, you know, there's more competition amongst the doctors and dentists. So I think they're maybe a little more used to advertising and getting their name out there, you know, on the internet, as opposed to some of the more traditional fields of medicine, where they can be pretty shocked that anybody would ever talk about them or say anything negative.
Mm-hmm. I know one question burns, and that is, how do I know that the ratings that I'm reading are a reflection of the service that physician's providing, and not people being upset because they're left too long in the waiting room, or, as is in the case of a lot of physicians, it's just a case of poor bedside manner and not poor care?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good point. And it's hard to know for sure if the ratings do reflect, you know, the quality of the doctor. But, you know, a lot of doctors will say, well, patients, they're not qualified to rate me. They're not qualified to say if I'm good or not. And, you know, the long and the short of it is the patient is the customer. And the customer is the most important aspect. And, you know, if they feel like they're getting their money, their time, and their money's worth from the doctor, well, I mean, that means something.
Mm.
And I think, you know, other people want to know, you know, what the other patients think about a doctor. And I think, you know, in the long run, the ratings sort of bring out the truth. You know, there's always some disgruntled people, and then there's always some people who are maybe relatives of the doctor who are going to say the doctor's great no matter what, mm-hmm. you know, no matter what they do. But I think as time goes by and there's more and more ratings added, that the truth comes out.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with John Swipsinski of MetRateMDs.com. And a final question is, there seems to be a bit of a backlash from some of the medical community in the fact that certain patients you're hearing about being asked to sign promises not to rate the doctor post-service.
Yeah, that's right. We refer to these as gag orders and or gag contracts. And some doctors have started mixing these contracts in with some of the other paperwork that new patients sign out, have to fill out when they come to see the doctor for the first time. And, you know, it's not a good thing. I mean, it basically is forcing the patient to sign away their freedom of speech rights to be able to talk about the doctor online. Now, I'd take the personal position that these contracts are not valid because it is a freedom of speech issue, but it's something that you want to look out for. If you are a patient and a doctor gets you to ask you to sign one of these things, you may want to think twice about it.
It has to be a red flag. If I was going to buy a new car and they told me that I wasn't allowed to comment on the quality of the car, I would think twice about purchasing that car. RateMDs is the site. John Swipsinski is my guest. Thanks a lot, John.
Oh, thanks for having me, Steve.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. You're listening to Dottotech, brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.
Only two things are certain in life, Art, and what are they?
death and taxes.
So we didn't want to talk about taxes because that's boring. So instead, we thought we'd talk about death. Remember that show?
Oh, yes.
We talked about death and your digital legacy, and it's something that we don't think a lot about, but it is worth thinking about, is what happens to your online presence after you pass the mortal coil. There are some disturbing things that can happen as if you don't put your digital affairs in order as you do your real world affairs. So that was the topic of this particular conversation here on Dottotech.
About 3 or 4 months ago, I received a friend request in Facebook for an audio tech, actually, that had worked on my TV show for many, many years. And I'd lost touch with Dave. And I get this friend request from Dave, and it says, you should be friends. So I said, yes, I'll be friends with Dave. And I just clicked yes. The next day, I went and visited his profile because I didn't have time the day that I actually accepted his friend request. And I was somewhat taken aback to discover that Dave had passed. And it was his family sending out friend requests on Facebook to let people know that this person who I'd known for many years and was an acquaintance more than a really close friend, but nevertheless somebody I cared about, had passed away. And I was torn for the longest time trying to figure out exactly what I thought. Well, I appreciated the information. I thought, this is a terrible way to find out, but then what is a good way to find out that somebody has left us? And then it kind of grew into a different thing. And the fact that they had set up his Facebook page as a memorial page, I went and searched out some pictures and posted some pictures and traded some stories with people. And it all became, for me at least, a fairly positive experience, which was a strange way, a kind of a new digital age way of finding out that we've lost a friend. Recently, Derek Miller passed away. He was a very popular blogger, and his passing was very public. The fact that he was posting about his illness all the way through, and it's had quite a profound effect over the last couple of weeks on the entire blogosphere and the internet community. In researching Derek's passing, I came across a site called deathanddigitallegacy.com. And Adele McAleer is that's her site. She's a marketing consultant in Montreal specializing in social media. Adele, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks very much for having me on, Steve.
And your site is fairly focused, deathanddigitallegacy.com, but it's something that until this past couple of weeks, I really hadn't given a lot of thought to. But we need to think about our legacy online.
That's right. Yeah, I started speaking about this about almost 3 years ago now. And, more and more people are finally starting to talk about it. But it's true. Not a lot of people give a lot of thought to what happens to all your online stuff after you pass.
Yeah, and also the fact that it's such a public and such an openly sharing place, and things like what happened with me. Sure, a lot of people have discovered that they've lost friends through Twitter or through Facebook or through some of the other social media. And they probably, like I, find it either acceptable or unacceptable, depending on the state of mood they're in and how delicate the information is presented.
Well, I'll tell you, one thing I have discovered after almost 3 years of this is everybody handles death very differently. It's a really unique experience. And this is a bit of a Wild West. There are no rules at the moment in terms of protocol. What is acceptable behavior? Somebody might be totally offended about receiving a friend request from Dave's family in the way that you did. Yet others might seek comfort in it.
Yes. Well, ultimately, as I said, it ended up being a site that I returned to a few times. I still have kept him as a friend because his Facebook page now, and this is something that's become almost common practice, his Facebook page has become a digital memorial to him.
Yes, that's correct. Now there are a couple of ways that people can go about that. They can actually request through Facebook a memorialization.
Mm-hmm.
And what that does is that actually freezes the number of friends that you have. So it's not possible at that point to request more friends.
Okay.
The other thing it does is it strips out your status updates. There was one story I'd heard about a family whose son had passed away, and the son used to do status updates as haikus.
Okay.
And the way Facebook works is you don't have to be a family member or next of kin to request memorialization. So a friend of their son's submitted the request for memorialization, and Facebook went ahead and did that. And so not only did it lock the family out of the account, but it also stripped all the haikus from the account.
Oh, so you have to think very carefully about whether or not, how you want to approach it. So I think a lot of people, for a lot of us now, it's an additional thing to consider is what do we want to do with that legacy? Because if for a lot of us, our Facebook account, for example, is full of lots of rich memories that somebody might enjoy going through, kind of, you know, tiptoeing through after we're gone. For others, it might be something that they don't want anybody to see at all.
Correct. And it is a very personal decision of what you want. Some people want everything archived, and then others just want to let it all go and let it disappear. Another thing specifically with Facebook is when you do memorialize an account, it takes your name out of the algorithm that is the suggestion algorithm, where they say, hey, you should reconnect with so-and-so. You haven't talked to them in a while.
That's a good thing, because within a couple of months, if you haven't touched base with somebody, a browser profile, you're reminded that they're your friend.
That's correct. And when that person is deceased, it can be quite upsetting.
Mm-hmm. And Facebook used to just, to be fair, Facebook is probably struggling with this, as does Twitter, but they used to just, when they heard somebody deceased, just delete their account. And that all changed in 2007 after the Virginia Tech massacres, and they were petitioned by friends and family to say, you know, we'd like to keep these kids' memories alive, and this is a really good way for us to do that.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
Yeah. So putting some thought into it, and certainly your site is a great place to go to look at the conversation, is kind of just step one that we have to do when we consider our digital legacy.
Mm-hmm. To Facebook's credit, they are actually one of the few social networks that has a policy around death. It's not a great policy because, as I said, anyone could submit a request for memorialization. They just need to have a link to an obituary.
Okay.
So that's a bit problematic in my eye, but there are lots of things you can do. You can take a digital inventory of what you've got. What are your digital assets online? If a particular importance is anything that you're actually paying for or earn an income from. So if you have a blog that you'd like to survive you and it's privately hosted and you pay for hosting, you need to make arrangements for that, because normally hosting accounts and domain renewals are tied to your credit card. One of the first things that happens after you die is your credit card is canceled.
So what happens then if you're with a hosting, if you have a profitable small business site that your family or somebody else might pick up and run with?
Well, you need to make sure that they know where it's hosted, that you've made arrangements for the payment process to be transferred over. You need to make arrangements with your host that in the event of your passing, that somebody else will be taking it over.
Even something like name renewal will be problematic for sites because of internet.
Absolutely. And the other, quite often the problem is that there aren't any legal ways to transfer digital accounts. More often than not, there's no legal way to transfer a digital account.
Oh.
This is a problem.
And we don't have answers for this yet. We only have questions.
We have a lot of questions. What we can do when you pass along your username and password to a family member to take over your things after you've passed, at best, that is giving somebody the permission, personal permission to impersonate you, but it does not entitle them to legal ownership of the digital asset.
And a lot of people would think that just the fact that you can get into the account gives you control of the account. That's the same as passing on control, but it really isn't.
It isn't, because all of the online services have non-transferability clauses in their terms of service.
So this is just the beginning of a conversation which will grow in importance as we move along.
Absolutely. This is going to be a very big deal, particularly if someone of notoriety passes away and has a lot of digital assets that are worth money, then I think at that point we're going to start to see some court cases.
We almost have to wait for that to happen and for our process to kind of kick in.
Sadly, that doesn't help a lot of the families who are struggling with this right now.
A good place to go and at least commiserate and share stories and gain ideas, gain a little bit of an understanding of what you can do to start helping things, make it a little bit easier for your family, especially if you're heavily engaged in digital life, is deathanddigitallegacy.com. Adele McAleer is the proprietor of that site, and I thank you very much for your time. This, I think we're going to have a conversation again and probably in the not too distant future.
Thanks very much for having me.
We have a Facebook fan page for people who are interested in who are on Facebook. It's a great way for us to let you know on a regular basis what's happening on the show. If you go to the Dottotech, Facebook.com/Dottotech and click like, it means, A, you like us, which makes us feel good. And who wouldn't want to make us feel good? I always want to.
There's very few people who make me feel good. So
well,
I would like one more.
Hundreds and hundreds of people can.
Or 100 more people.
But it also means that we're now in your feed, so that when we're announcing what's coming up on the show and when we're asking questions, you get that in your feed. So it's a good thing. A, it makes us feel good. B, it informs you. And that's a win-win situation, which is pretty much all anybody can hope for.
App of the Week is brought to you by MacStation, your Apple solutions experts.
Chris Miller from MacStation is with us for our App of the Week. Chris, what do you got?
I have a great little useful app called DocShelf. It's brand new. I saw it a few weeks ago, grabbed it. It's worth about $4 or $5 on the App Store.
DocShelf.
DocShelf. Now, you know the dock on the Apple desktop?
Yeah.
Where you keep all your shortcuts and bits and pieces. To some of us who use multi-monitor systems, sometimes the dock ends up on the far left or the far right or the bottom, and it's never quite where where you want it to be for useful parts. For instance, you want your apps on the bottom, you want shortcuts on the left. DocShelf actually creates 4 or 5, or as many as you want, additional docks. So you can have a dock on the left with a couple apps on it. You can have a dock on the right with a few shortcuts for pictures, documents, that sort of thing. You have a dock on the ceiling, a dock on the side, a dock on a second monitor, a dock on a third monitor.
Okay, yeah,
it's
we get
great.
The point. So however many monitors you can have docks. Or you can have multiple docks on the same monitor.
Indeed. You can even
so
have...
You can do like a frame of docks.
If you were so interested, yes.
Okay, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Well, my app is not available right now in the App Store on the Apple side, but it is an app that if you have an Android or some other devices, you can use. It's called ChromeMark, and I'm using it on my non-Apple cell phone right now. ChromeMark allows me to access all of my Chrome bookmarks from my mobile device, so I don't have to go and I don't have to search for a website. That's one of my favorites, one of my bookmarks. If I'm on my mobile device, it resources and goes back to my computer and finds all of my bookmarks, and then it's basically a shared bookmark file.
You know why I love that? Because I love Chrome.
Yeah, Chrome is great. And I haven't found this yet on in the App Store for Apple, although it's probably just due out very soon because it's a fairly new app. As far as I can tell, it's called ChromeMarks.
Cool.
So that's it. Those are our apps of the week. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you much.
App of the Week is brought to you by MacStation. Book a one-on-one training with our Apple specialists or sign up for one of our free workshops. Get the most out of your Mac with MacStation. Do you have a comment or question for DottoTech? Visit our website at dottotech.com and click on Contact Us. DottoTech is brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Now, back to Steve.
Just a quick reminder that it is early January. If you are thinking about buying a house, if you own a house, now might be a good time to check out what your mortgage options are. Bill Macklem Mortgages is the place to go. BillyMack.com is the place that I trust for all of my mortgage advice. And even if you've got a mortgage and you're not sure how much longer is left on it, you're not sure if you're in a good space, contact Bill Macklem. He will take a look at it, tell you, kind of give you a checkup on what your mortgage health is and if you can be doing something to make it better, to make more money stay in your pocket or more equity be paid off on your house. That's all. Build more equity in your house, should I say. That's all good things. Now, our next interview was one of my favorite of the year. It's a bit of a sleeper interview because it might not seem so interesting on the surface, but then when you think about it, it is fantastic. It's Over-the-Air HD is now available through most of our country. If you don't know what Over-the-Air HD is, it's phenomenal quality, high-definition television, better than you get from your cable provider, and it is free.
Joining me in studio now, Colin Cottrell, the merchandising manager at London Drugs, and we're going to discuss something which was in the news a lot a way back, but is finally coming to roost now, which is this digital-to-analog conversion that the different broadcasters have been scrambling to make sure that they have the gear for. This is very different than high-def TV, which has just been a revolution and most people are enjoying now. Colin, what's the genesis of this? CRTC made some changes to the rules.
We're following the coattails of the U.S. They're freeing up that band of frequency.
Mm-hmm.
So that mandates everyone to the TV broadcasters to get off the analog airways, make room for other technologies and whatnot, and move to digital.
Okay. So it's, what's happening is people who have an old analog TV with an old antenna, which we all used to have when we were kids, I guess, that bandwidth of signal, that analog signal is going away very soon.
For the most part.
Okay.
Not 100%. So if you're a city of less than 300,000 people, for example, you're not mandated to change over.
Okay. Yeah. So small towns can be staying.
Right.
But bottom line is there's going to be less and less service on that. And so if you're just taking free television right now over the air, things are probably going to change for you. But they're going to change for the better if you just make a couple of modifications, because the over the air digital signal is spectacular.
Absolutely. Fantastic. Yeah.
So, and this is where I think the confusion lies. People think that they are digital now because they have a cable box and they're getting cable from Shaw or from Rogers or from Delta Cable or any of TELUS, any of these cable providers. But we're not talking about that level of digital, even though that signal is a digital, but that's a cable signal. This is over the air now.
Yeah. The cable signals are compressed.
Yeah.
So they're going to be substandard to an uncompressed high-definition signal.
Okay. And so what we're talking about is going back to the days of having an antenna.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But it's also we're going back to the days of free TV. You're not going to pay for any of these channels if you have it. So what does the average consumer need? Let's say that they've got their plasma, they've got their LCD TV at home, and so they're halfway there already, right?
In most cases, yeah. If your LCD or plasma is within the last, say, 3 years, maybe, mm-hmm. maybe four,
mm-hmm.
All you need is an antenna, because chances are that set will have an ATSC tuner or a digital tuner built into it.
That's what you have to look for, is you have to look to see if it has a tuner built in.
Right.
Okay, and then there'll be a port on the back. What's the antenna connection look like?
It would just be an antenna in.
It like says antenna coaxial. In. Yeah. Okay, so it's a coax cable.
Yeah.
Now, what do these antennas themselves look like, and how much do they cost?
Oh, it's all relative to how close you are to the actual transmission signal.
Okay.
And that will determine the position and the size and the height that you position the antenna.
Okay.
Yeah. So if you're, say, in North Vancouver, mm-hmm. people will be able to receive off-air signals with probably... I'm pushing it here, but probably a pair of rabbit ears.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And then there's other steps.
So we're going back to the rabbit ears days.
And some people could if they're that close.
And the youngest kid in the family has to go up and stand near them and adjust them and hold them just a certain way together.
Yes and no. Yes and no. A digital signal does not fade in or out.
Okay.
So there's no ghosting. There's nothing like that. You either get it
or you don't. Okay.
So you keep rotating that antenna until you get the picture.
And then once it's there?
And once it's there, it's there. You're locked.
Okay. Yeah. And what about on the roof? Are we going to have people installing these things on their roofs? Do we have to go to that level, or is it going to be
in room? I believe you will. Once people see the quality of this,
mm-hmm.
they will.
And let's talk a little bit about the quality. So just a minute. So we've got, with your regular TV now, you can now get a digital signal, which is replacing part of the analog signal. Mm-hmm. And what stations are we going to get? Is it just the local stations? So we're going to get the globals, the CBCs?
I guess to oversimplify, any station that has made the commitment to change over or has been mandated to change over,
mm-hmm.
That's within, say, a 65-kilometer radius from where you live.
Oh, okay.
In and around there, and that's a kind of an average to larger size antenna. I'm not saying that's the limitation.
Mm-hmm.
You can get larger antennas, but you will need to the further you are away.
Okay.
So you really need to determine who is broadcasting and how far away.
So for most people, say in the lower mainland area of Vancouver, they're going to get their global, they're going to get their CBC, they're going to get their. I guess Rogers doesn't. Of course,
global and CBC for sure.
For sure. Yeah.
You may even get a KVOS Bellingham.
Okay.
And it's quite possible, depending on where you are, you get Victoria stations as well.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And so now the hardware is. An antenna. You drop by London Rugs, you guys have an assortment of antennas. They cost and range from...
Yeah, our antennas range from $10 for a basic pair of rabbit ears to about $150 for a fairly large, serious outdoor directional antenna.
Okay, which you're going to be installing outside. You're going to be lining up and getting this. Now, let's talk about the quality, because mm-hmm. when we go high def, everybody's experienced high def now and they love it. But the high def that we're going to get over this broadcast is actually better than the HD that we're getting from our cable provider.
It is.
And it's not just a little bit better. It's an order of magnitude
better. It's considerably better. If you were to see a compressed high-definition signal, which is our cable and satellite providers.
Which is pretty darn good.
Oh, it's good. Yeah. Oh, I'm not knocking it. Believe me. Believe me. But if you were to see that side by side with an HD ATSC off-air signal, it's night and day.
So for most of us, this is going to come to roost come October because we're going to want hockey.
Yeah, for sure.
Because once you watch that, because we all know how high def has changed viewing hockey.
Yeah.
If we're going to be getting that from CBC in high def, because that's really the sport that we're going to be getting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't care if I can watch Desperate Housewives or something of that nature. Yeah. It just makes not that much difference in my life.
I know of a few of the managers in our chain there that have already set this up for themselves, specifically for that reason, just so that they can get the hockey games.
This isn't really for most of us a change. This isn't something we have to do. It's something that we might want to do because we are going to, and then we're just going to have to pick and choose when we want to use that free signal. And for some of us, like a lot of people that just use cable only for sports.
Yeah.
That might be an option.
They might want to have a look into it. And that's not throwing away your cable.
Yeah.
It's just getting this option. If you can get the signal, which I think most people can, depending on where they are.
And
it's a cheap investment.
Yeah, and for the other, and for the rest of us that, for people that do rely on analog, things may change for them. And for cottage people with cabins and stuff like that, it's something that they're going to have to give some serious thought to. But you know, now being able to watch the hockey game in high def at the cottage, that's not bad either.
Yeah, yeah.
But you're going to have to check. It's back to the old days of where is the signal available and sniffing it out. Now, I guess that is there any easy way to know if we have a good signal in our area, especially if once you get into the outlying areas?
Yes.
Is there any easy way to find it out before you invest in the antenna?
Absolutely. You go to tvfool.com.
Okay, a website, tvfool.com.
Yep. And you basically just key in your postal code or your address and go through a series of prompts, and it will tell you what satellites are within your region and by code of color. So if you're getting a green color on that satellite, that tells you that you probably just need a tabletop antenna. If it's yellow, you need a larger antenna. If it's red, you'll need a large, you know, outdoor antenna.
And you'll get an idea of what stations you can get at that point.
Absolutely. It goes right down to the call letters.
And the investment is purchasing an antenna for anywhere between $20 and $200, but there's no subscription fees.
The TV is
free from that point on. Yeah. The cable companies can't be thrilled about this. And it's better quality.
Yeah, it's just you're not going to get the selection you do with cable or satellite.
You don't get the selection you do.
And one other thing I'd like to note is with London Drugs, if you purchase an antenna and it doesn't work for you, we have a 30-day return policy. So you can try it, and if it doesn't work, you can always bring it back. So that shouldn't be.
That gives you a little more security.
Yeah.
Awesome. Colin Cottrell from London Drugs, thanks for filling us in on the digital to analog conversion that we are currently going through.
You're welcome, Steve.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. MacTech, brought to you by MacStation, your Apple solutions experts.
Chris Miller from MacStation joins us, as is his custom, to talk about the world of Mac. How are you this week, Chris?
I'm well, Steve. How's yourself?
A little stressed.
A little stressed?
A little bit stressed. The impending Christmas season.
Oh, yeah.
Or day leaves me always feeling a little. A friend of ours made a great quote the other day. It ain't Christmas till someone's crying. And nobody's started crying yet, but I know it's coming.
Yeah.
So help me out here. Let's talk Mac. What's up in the world of Mac?
Well, I think I might be able to help your stress situation.
Yep.
There's one thing that irritates every single geek that I know.
Mm-hmm.
It's your machine just crawling, just acting too slowly.
And it slows down. Does it get slower over time?
It does, but not for the reason that most people think it does.
Most people think it's because they got lots of programs on it.
Well,
and that's not the reason.
It's really not. It's little.
It get old.
It's little dumb things that people do with their machine and they don't notice.
Okay.
Just like a car or anything else, you need to do a couple little things to make sure it's not about to fall apart.
Okay.
For instance, I know tons of people that they bring in their machine and they boot it up and they've got 500 items on their desktop. The desktop is just covered with items.
Oh,
Yes, I've got – that's one of my bugbears with somebody close to me in my life.
Yep.
Her desktop has a gazillion things on it. I say, that slows your Mac down, and she doesn't believe me.
Because it's using up RAM. Mm. Everything that sits on your desktop has to have a preview, has to be thought about, so it stays in RAM, which can slow your machine down dreadfully.
That's where that program that you talked to us about a couple of weeks ago, MemoryScope, comes in. Mm-hmm. I love MemoryScope. It's MemoryScope changed my life.
I'm happy with it.
I'm a MemoryScope aficionado.
Yeah, it just if
it tells us what resources are being used. By
yeah,
what.
And if you always have your if you're always short of RAM and you have a ton of stuff on your desktop, just take all that stuff and put it in a folder. I've never seen anybody who actually needs to access quickly that many files.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do need, you can just use Spotlight, yeah. which is easy enough.
Yeah.
Another
clean up your desktop.
Yeah. Another great thing to do is make sure that your hard drive has at least 10% free space.
Mm.
Again, real simple, real easy to do. If you've got a 500 gig hard drive and you have 10 gigs of free space, your computer's always having to, it's like trying to rearrange
stuff around.
Yeah, it's like trying to rearrange furniture in a room that's just too tight.
I got a better analogy for you. It's like trying to cook before you've cleaned the dishes.
Well, no, I do that all the time.
But you shouldn't, because when you got a mess around you in the kitchen, it's tough to do the cooking.
Fair enough.
Okay. That's a better analogy.
Another really good one, if you're having really slow boot time, check to see how many programs are started up.
Okay, where do you do that?
You can go to users in system preferences and actually go to startup items. If you have 20 things in there, your computer's trying to launch everything the moment your computer starts up, and it's going to take you a 10-minute boot time.
And there will be things left in there from things that you started and you thought you were going to use and that you don't. For instance, if you were running a QuickBooks accounting package for a period of time, there'll be a QuickBooks startup in there. Maybe you're not using it anymore.
Yeah.
So you find that in there, take it out.
Or just iTunes is one of the most common ones that sits in there. A lot of people don't listen to music right away, and if you want to, it's easy enough to launch later. Mm-hmm. But it just takes up system cycles.
Got it. Okay, that's a good one.
Yeah.
And have one more?
The other one is to just take a look at your activity monitor. Again, you can get to this through Spotlight. Just go into Spotlight, type in activity monitor, and just see if you've got a bunch of programs running in the back that you don't even see, mm-hmm. that you don't use. You have no idea what they are. Now, don't go in and start messing around with system stuff, but if you see a bunch of programs listed under your username that you've never even heard of and don't know what they do, kill them. And their processes. Try to find the program somewhere in your application and see if
you need it.
It's just sitting there.
So these are things you can do for free to speed up your computer.
Of course,
more RAM is always better. Mm-hmm. You know, there are things you can do to spend money. Downloading that MemoryScope program, we'll put the link in for that again. That mm-hmm. is outstanding. What it does for me is it gives me a little bit of peace of mind, because even though I only have 4 gig of RAM mm-hmm. on my system, which seems to me it should be enough, but it's really not enough. But quite often, my computer will freeze, but what it's doing is it's freeing up space. It's mm-hmm. freeing up RAM, so it's some swapping stuff around. And the nice thing about MemoryScope is it tells you, it says
freeing memory.
Yeah, it tells you it's freeing memory up.
So you can go, oh, cool, I'm going
to
go get a drink.
And you also stop thinking, what have I got? Why have I got so many things open that it needs to free it up? And it makes me start to look. And basically, I think I need more RAM, though. I think that's the best answer is, rather than being more disciplined, it's just adding more RAM.
And if you did both, you'd be even better.
You would. Now, one question going back to your hard drive point about making sure you have 10% free space. Mm-hmm. Is defragging still a big deal?
Not really.
It's not.
Not on a Mac. It's just not that big of a deal. I've seen Mac defraggers that you can get, and the actual stuff that they churn out, not a big deal. Hmm. You can get stuff.
Because it used to make a big difference in my Windows machines.
The key word in that sentence was Windows
machines, yeah.
They just, it acts in a different way. Mac will actively correct the sort of
file system.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you ever do want to clean it out and just get rid of some of your old cache files that are just eating up space, there is a program, Clean My Mac.
Uh-huh.
It's $29, I believe, and it will hunt through your user folder, your system caches, your application caches, gunk left over in your trash bin, because there's always little bits and pieces
and downloads folder files, and stuff like
indeed,
that
you just never see that. And you can run that once every 2-3 months, and it'll give you a couple gigs of free space.
That's free hard drive space.
That's free hard drive space. And I mean, it will speed up your machine a little bit, but the real key is to, if you have less than 10%, look in your machine. Online, it's easy because in System Profiler, it says exactly what is using up space on your machine. Mm-hmm. And if you've got a 500 gig hard drive and you have 400 gigs of music, think about either paring down the amount of music you keep on the machine or get a bigger hard drive.
Or move your music onto a server, onto something off, a hard drive hanging off of your airport. That would be a good way to do it.
Or some sort of iCloud.
Ah, the little foreshadowing of next week's show.
A little
perhaps.
Prelude, if you will.
Chris Miller is one of the chief geeks at MacStation. For more on anything Apple-related, MacStation's the place to go.
We'll see you there.
MacTech is brought to you by MacStation, your environmentally friendly solution. Trade up to the newest technology. Save taxes on the new machine. Give a second life to your old Mac. MacStation, who said business and pleasure don't mix?
Well, Art, that's it for our Best Of show. What do you think?
I think if the new year starts off this easy, it should be this way the whole year round.
Yeah, it's a lot easier just introing interviews rather than actually doing them. You know, the whole death and digital legacy thing still sends a chill down my spine. I loved all of the advice that Todd gave about decluttering our digital life, and it inspires me to clean things up a bit. How often have you seen your New Year's resolution through all year?
Never.
Never?
Never.
How old are you?
35.
How many have you made?
About 32. They're
real exercises in disappointment in ourselves, aren't they?
I just have a bad short-term memory. I forget by like week two. I was like, oh, I said I was going to do that. Oh, crap.
Yeah. That's part of the problem being raised in the Catholic Church. When we're raised in the Catholic Church, you have Lent, and you only have 4 weeks that you have to stay on something, right?
Smart.
You can stay on focus for 4 weeks, and there's like a countdown until you can give it up. With New Year's resolutions, you got to stay with it the whole time.
365 days. That's
too long. It's too long. Lent, 1 month. Give me one month. I can handle a month. That's the way to
New
do
month
things.
Resolution.
Well, next week we'll have a brand new show for you. Everybody, we hope that you had a great New Year's, and we certainly look forward to a new year here on Dotto Tech. On behalf of Art Factora, I am Steve Dotto. Thanks for tuning in, and we will see you next week.
Dotto Tech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.